It's time. It's time to open your eyes. It's time to open your mind. It's time to grow up and face reality. It's time to lock and load because it's Meat Trapper time. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 190 of Meat Trapper Radio. We are living through a pretty big drop in the stock market, and there's a lot going on with that. I've been following that very closely, and the whole coronavirus thing, and how the powers that be are trying to intertwine those two, when I don't think there's much correlation between the two, but perhaps we'll have time to talk about that. Well, we've got a good show tonight. Last week's episode, where we discussed single-shot shotguns and subcaliber adapters or subcaliber devices, generated a lot of feedback. People have some very, very good personal insight with their experiences with these. So this is going to be really good because I love, instead of me just doing all the talking, I love when people contribute their own experience and their own thoughts on these subjects. It really provides valuable additional input. And if we have time in the second half of tonight's show, I'm going to talk about impact weapons. Those of you that know me know how much I love impact weapons, such as blackjacks and slappers, lead saps, brass knuckles, all those, the old-timey, get-up-and-crunch-bones type of weapons. I just love that stuff. And I've got some interesting insight on those. So anyway, before we get into that, let's give thanks to our sponsor, Mr. Brian McKee of SouthernSnares.com. And if you haven't already seen it, if you're, first of all, if you're not subscribed to the Meat Trapper YouTube channel, please go on YouTube and just click subscribe and click like. Even if you don't watch the videos, it always helps boost my numbers and get me out there a little bit more. But the last video that I did was an interesting video. It had no catches, no kills, no exciting, you know, beaver wrestling scenes in it or anything like that. But to me, it was one of the most important videos I've made in a while. And what it was I took some of the footage that Brian has shot where he pull tests his snares. And what a pull test is you want to find out what the real breaking strength of your cable is. You know, just because you buy it from a supplier and they say, oh, the breaking strength is 980 pounds, you don't know that until you actually test it for yourself. The same thing goes with snare locks. You know, I've talked a lot about hardware, double ferrules, stop buttons, you know, all of that kind of stuff, swivels, you know, and how quality hardware matters. Well, what Brian does is he has a little bench that he has a winch rigged up to, and he tests this stuff on a regular basis. When he gets a shipment in, he'll test the cables, see how the cable, how, you know, what weight it takes for the cables to pop. You know, this is quality controls type stuff, and he tests the locks and the swivels and everything else. And he videotapes this. Well, you know, I have a lot of these videos, and they're kind of boring to watch because, you know, you're stretching a piece of aircraft cable until it pops. There's not really a whole lot of excitement there. So I only used one of the many videos that I have. But what was interesting is he has a little digital readout that displays how many pounds of pressure is being exerted by the winch. And you video it, and then at the exact moment that the cable snaps, you can freeze the video and you can see what it did. And I've often made the statement that he, with his crimping equipment, he can put a crimp on cable that's stronger than the cable itself. In other words, when he puts a stop button on, or when he puts some, you know, a double ferrule on and makes a loop, the cable is going to snap before that crimp lets loose. And I personally, back in the days when I was making my own snares, I've had animals pop the ends off a snare and get away. And especially if you're hammering your stop buttons on, or you're hammering your ferrules on, because you cannot get the same amount of pressure each time with a hammer blow. So you're going to have one time that's just right. You're going to have one snare that was hit too lightly, and the cable can pull. You're going to have another snare that you hit too hard, and that causes the aluminum hardware to have cracks, stress fractures in it, which weakens it. And what he uses is a hydraulic machine to put crimps on it. So you can go and watch the video, but it's fascinating. He was testing one of the hog snares, and the cable broke at 1,515 pounds of pressure. The swivel survived, the big number 12 barrel swivel. It was stretched, but it didn't break, and it still swiveled. The lock, the SureLock that he was using, the steel lock, it did not break. And the crimps did not pull off. In other words, the first thing that failed was the cable. And he was later able to break the swivel at over 1,500 pounds. I forget what it was. It was 1,550 or 1,552 to break the swivel. And this is the kind of thing that you have to just sort of watch and observe, because if you just go out to some random big box snare supply or trap supply guy, you don't know who's making their snares, and you don't know what kind of cable they're made out of. And, you know, anyway, enough rambling about that. But if you haven't watched the video, it's pretty eye-opening. And as they say, the proof is in the pudding. So now, single-shot shotguns. You know, Dave Canterbury did an entire series, I think he called it the Long Hunter series, where he used a single-shot shotgun and he used the various subcaliber inserts, and that's sort of where this thing really got popularized. And I had talked a little bit last episode about, you know, the advantages of a single-shot shotgun, you know, affordability. You can use all different kinds of ammo, you know, and then you can get a subcaliber insert. And so we had a number of people offer some feedback, and some of this is really, really good stuff. The first up is going to be Eric the Viking. Now, those of you who know Eric, he is a fellow Patreon member, and he lives in Scandinavia. So his gun laws are a little bit different. For instance, it's very difficult for him to get a hold of a handgun, which sucks. But then again, he can walk into the store and purchase a suppressor, pay his money, walk out and screw it on his rifle and start shooting. No different than walking in and buying a can of beans at the supermarket. Same thing. So that's pretty cool. But anyway, Eric has some feedback on a single shot shotgun, and I got a kick out of this because, you know, his proximity to Russia, he has access to a lot of Russian weapons, and so that's what he has. Let's take a listen.
Hi Tim, Eric the Viking here. Just a few comments regarding the single shot shotguns. So like you, I also got inspiration from Dave Canterbury. And I think he's running a Richardson shotguns mainly. I was looking for a Beretta single shot, which is very foldable. It has a very foldable model. But at the time, I couldn't find it on the market. So I ended up with a good old Soviet Steyrbakal shotgun, probably made by Railroad Tracks, but it has never failed me, despite very cold weather, and I have not necessarily been too nice with it. But you know, at the time I bought it for $25, which is very cheap here, considering a brand new Remington 870 in my country will cost you close to $700. So I don't know what happened to the gun prices here in Europe, but it's gotten rather expensive. So for me, I really like it. When I go to the forest now, I have a tendency to pick that one instead of my Remington 870 Super Mag, simply because the simplicity and the weight. Now, if I bought the Beretta one, it would have probably been a little bit lighter than this Baikal. It's, you know, it's a Soviet gun, so it is lighter than my Remington, of course, but not that lighter. But it's very simple. They are so easy to maintain, as you say. They will eat a lot of ammunition, so you can shoot usually whatever you want with it. I have not tried very heavy loads with it. I haven't shot steel with it either. It can probably take it, but I have not taken the chances. So, but despite everything, it works very well. I have used it a lot for new hunters, and for, I call it, guest hunters. You have a shotgun, you are not that concerned about if it gets any damage. It's $20, which is still very, very cheap. So it's very good for the backcountry. You are a bit limited on some areas compared to a Remington, but still, there has not been so many hunting situations in my life where I would need following up shots. And since you only have one shot, you know, you are a bit more conservative with your ammo, which is good, especially when you, like me, if I go to the mountains or to the back country, you know, there is no car, there's no quad bike, there's no horse, or it's you, so you have to, you have enough equipment you have to carry with you, and my back is not what it used to be. So for me, it's much easier just to bring that one. So yeah, that is my thoughts on that. I also have the 22 adapter you were talking about. I did not buy the short lane ones. I bought just a 12 gauge to 22 long rifle on eBay many years ago. I don't think it has any particular stamp on it, but it works okay, actually. And I used it to dispatch animal, at least that's what I bought it for. I only used it once for that, but usually when I'm on my little trap line, I will always carry it with me, and it's very handy. And with a little bit of training, you can have it fairly accurate. A friend of mine has the what are they calling them? The fast lane adapters? No, short lane adapters in the 17 HMR. And I would say he can get it quite accurate. Although it's not exactly what they are meant for. For me, you know, if you're going to shoot more than 50 meters with this, you might as well bring another rifle with you. But within 50 meters, everything is possible. But 22 for dispatch is brilliant. Not having to lug with you an extra rifle, which I would have to do because I live in Europe. You know, getting a pistol license is one thing. But, you know, with the pistol license, you're not allowed to use it for hunting or for dispatching. You know, it's for range only. So that is my limitation. So this adapters, they are legal in my country. I have checked it. I was a little bit nervous first time I ordered it, but thank you, Grandma. Grandma always helps out when I need to buy something dodgy off eBay. So, yes, that's my 2 cents. I hope is of any interest. Have a good one, Tim. Have a good one. Bye.
Awesome, buddy. Thank you very much, Eric. I truly appreciate that. And that was some interesting stuff. You pointed out the one thing I didn't mention, and that is simply the lightweight. Now, Eric and I talk a lot. We correspond a lot. And when you see some of the wild and rugged remote terrain that he ends up in, he's exactly right. Where he's at, there you're not jumping on a four-wheeler. There's no giant pickup truck. You know, you're gonna go in by boat or by foot, and what you got is what you got. So weight is a very big deal, and when you're in an environment that's as remote and potentially as hostile as what he is in, you're gonna put a lot of effort into your survival gear to keep you warm and keep you dry. And you're not able to carry a mountain of crap like a lot of us are able to here. And I thought it was interesting how it seems like the Russian philosophy of weapons is the same, whether it's an AK-47 or whether it's a single-shot shotgun, just light, simple, cheap, and functional. You know, and there's a lot to be said for that. I mean, after all, as he just told us, he tends to grab that shotgun simply because, if it gets abused, it's no big deal. So there's a lot to think about there, a lot to chew on as well. Now, next up is our good friend Joe. Joe is also a fellow Patreon supporter. And I hope you guys listening to this that aren't on Patreon start to see a trend here is... You see these guys that are supporters, these guys have their act together, and we have a great, great tribe going. And if you ought to check it out, patreon.com/meattrapper. But anyway, Joe has some feedback as well, so let's take a listen to what Joe has to say.
Hey, Tim. It's Joe, and I just finished listening to your most recent podcast, and great stuff as always, man. It's weird because you'll frequently present topics that are ones that have been on my own mind. And it's kind of serendipitous and spooky. It's happened more than once, so that doesn't help. But anyway, man, jumping right into it, I had a couple thoughts, based off the stuff you were talking about. I figured I'd shoot them on over to you and, see what you thought. So anyway, jumping in, you mentioned subcaliber devices. And also, Daniel, he shot some info over to you about those things. And don't forget, and I'm sure you're aware and your listeners are aware, that you're not just, they're not just relegated to shotguns. You can also use subcaliber devices in rifles, deer rifles, that probably everybody listening to you already owns. I take advantage of that a lot. I got a Remington 700 and 30-06, and I frequently shoot 32 ACP out of it with the use of a subcaliber device, and it has a very muffled report, and it's of course cheaper than 30-06, and would be ideal for smaller game that you don't want to obliterate with a big deer bullet, and you can also take advantage of it with rifles, so that's something to keep in mind. Also, that with shotguns, the subcaliber devices aren't just for single shots. I use them plenty in my pump action shotguns, with the only caveat just being careful when you put the subcaliber device, in your chamber, and when you extract it, not to rack it wide open like a jackass and break off one of your extractors or something. But you can easily use them in pump shotguns, and I've done that myself. That prevents you or keeps you from having to go buy a single shot shotgun if you don't have one or don't want to, spend the money on one. You can take advantage of what you probably already got laying around. So you spoke to the attributes of shotguns and single shots, and a couple that I don't see mentioned very frequently is the fact that shotguns, both themselves and the ammunition, lend themselves very easily to modification with limited tools / knowledge. The ammunition is very easy to modify. I think I spoke to you before about using wax slugs. You know, I can get number 8 shot, bird shot, the cheapest crap that I can buy at Walmart. And also, I'll slip in there that shotgun ammo, at least in my state, is the only ammo that you can buy directly off the shelf. So that in itself is good. It's not locked up in a case where you have to go get somebody to go get a box of it. You know, it's wide open. It's the only ammo like that, at least where I'm living anyway. You can get cheap stuff, and with a couple of crayons, you can take down a deer. And there's nothing illegal about crayons. So that's something to also keep in mind. And jumping back to the guns, the barrels lend themselves well to modification as far as the length goes. Of course, this would be in a legal manner. Nobody wants to end up like Randy Weaver did. But in a legal sense, in a legal manner, done correctly and legally, the barrels can be shortened without any detriment to the performance or accuracy of the shotgun, for the most part. You know, when you have a rifled barrel, if you cut that down, you're going to screw up the rifling, you're going to screw up the crown, and you're going to screw up the trajectory and the accuracy of that gun. But with shotguns, you can cut down the barrel and... besides the, you know, the scatter radius, you're not going to create something unusable or inaccurate. Whereas with a rifle, you know, you got that consideration. Of course, you could, you know, counterbore the crown, you know, if you did it with a rifle, but that's beyond the scope of most individuals that aren't in, you know, gunsmithing circles to do. So, you know, they're easy to modify. The guns are easy to modify. The ammo is easy to modify on the cheap and on the fly and without much tools, without much experience. And that's the only gun out there that I know that has those two attributes along with many others. It's very unique in that sense. So, also, the subcaliber devices with rifles. I read about that a long time ago. And anybody listening to you, Tim, and clearly if they're hearing my voice, they are, should also check out an author who went by the pen name of Ragnar Benson. He was published by Paladin Press, who has since gone out of business. And he was old school dude. He had a lot of information and a lot of knowledge on poaching and trapping and survival from a sensible standpoint, and he's very well worth looking into. And given the fateful times that we live in, having a book on different ways to put food in your mouth on a shelf in your house that can't be turned off wouldn't hurt you. So that's something else to keep in the back of your head. Oh, and then lastly, you touched on the coronavirus and home remedies and preventative stuff, and I'm also a big fan of the colloidal silver. That stuff is very easy to generate. You know, if you got some alligator clips and some 9-volt batteries, you can easily do it at home, and that stuff is pretty incredible. You can ingest it, and of course you can use it topically, as you spoke to. So yeah, I would definitely advocate looking into that, or just getting the supplies if you don't already. It's a very minimal list to be able to generate that at home. That's not going to hurt you to be able to do that either. Also, I'd recommend people look into thieves oil. Thieves oil has a rich history as far as plagues and pandemics go. So you might look into thieves oil. It's something I've been using for years. It's pretty cool stuff. And then also, you mentioned tinctures, and you definitely don't see a lot of talk about those things, man. Nobody remembers or knows that there's plenty of plants and trees around you that can help you. One that I would recommend would be looking into sweet gum and looking at a way to harvest the star balls that fall off that tree and creating tinctures so that you can put that shikimic acid that's in sweet gum, which is the active ingredient in Tamiflu, to use. And it's completely free. And you probably got a tree not too far from you. So anyway, man, a couple things to look into. And just a couple ideas. So anyway, Tim, thanks for what you do, man.
Thank you very much, Joe. That's some great stuff, because you're exactly right. There were a couple of things that I failed to mention. And that's great stuff about the wax slugs and the cut shells. There's a lot of this old school low tech stuff that's still perfectly viable. Now, I know there are, you know, all the latest things out there is to get the, you know, the Beretta Super Eagles and the Black Eagle shotguns and all of the high-tech stuff and the tungsten super shot and all that. But when it comes right down to putting meat on the table, there's a lot to be said for the old scatter gun and a subcaliber insert. Now, that's a great tip on the fact that you can get subcaliber inserts for a 30 caliber bolt-action rifle as well. That's something that I was completely unaware of. I had no idea. So thank you, Joe. I appreciate that. Now, Nicholas also had some feedback on shotgun adapters, the subcaliber adapters. I thought this was very interesting. He said, I have some experience with the shotgun adapters. I picked up an old Ivor Johnson 16-gauge years ago in a deal. It sat in the rack as someone in the past had shot corrosive ammo in it and didn't bother to clean it. The barrel was like a sewer pipe, which is a shame because it fit me like a glove. Recently, I bought a 38 special adapter from MCA Sports. The advantage of this over the short lane is length. And by short lane, he's talking about the company short lane adapters. Mine is 18 inches long, and it shoots like a house of fire. 1-inch groups at 25 yards with just the bead. I'm just finishing up making a rear peep sight for it so I can trim that bead down a bit. And let me just interrupt here. That's a brilliant idea. That's a brilliant idea. But anyway, to continue, I left the full 28-inch barrel of the 16-gauge alone. With lower velocity hand loads, the extra 10 inches acts like a flash hider or a can. Let me stop once again there. Brilliant. What he's talking about is, in other words, you've got this subcaliber adapter down inside that shotgun, and you pull the trigger on that 38 special round. First of all, that round is being fired inside the shotgun barrel, and that shotgun barrel acts like a flash suppressor, a very big, effective flash suppressor, and it also helps muffle the report. It's another benefit. You know, basically a sort of a low effectiveness suppressor. Sort of like a bloop instead of a bang. he said, as far as my charger idea, 22 Plinkster on YouTube did a video about it a month or so ago, and it got my attention as well. Yeah, he did a good video, and I do like 22 Plinkster. Then he goes on to talk about the Wuhan virus and all of that kind of stuff. And yeah, so he was right on all of that. But I thought that was great, great feedback. And once again, there's some other things about these subcaliber adapters that I had failed to consider. So thanks, Nicholas. I appreciate that. Now, one last piece of feedback that we got regarding the hot tent portion of our episode, previous episode, where I had talked about hot tenting. And Patreon member Notvende, who is Austrian. It's interesting, we've got a lot of European feedback here lately, which I think is just great, absolutely great. But Notvende commented the following, and I thought I would share it because this was a great story. he says, "Well, I served in the Austrian army. We had a week of winter camping, and we were sleeping in pretty big tents suited for 8 soldiers. There was an incredible amount of snow outside. If one was digging a hole straight down to the ground, he could barely look over the surface of the snow." So it sounds like he's got like 6 feet of snow on the ground. It says, "That amount of snow was a plus, though, since all of our tents were shielded from the icy winds. These tents were an early version of hot tents. There was a wood stove about half the size of an oil drum, and the stovepipe was also the center pole keeping the roof up. There were hooks mounted at breast level around the pipe, and one of my comrades, not the brightest candle on the chandelier, hung his rifle, which was the Austrian version of the FNFAL, on one of these hooks. The next morning, the whole buttstock of the rifle was gone. It was melted by the enormous heat of the stovepipe." Never have I witnessed such a royal ass chewing that happened right after that. Yeah. I'm sorry, I couldn't help but laugh at that. I can only imagine, being in that frigid of an environment and that deep down in the snow, and having that stove just running red hot, and somebody hanging their fowl up next to the stovepipe, and waking up the next morning after a deep sleep and having the buttstock melted. Yeah, normally when you think about having a weapon meltdown, you're usually talking about the barrel under a high sustained rate of fire and not the buttstock. But so anyway, thanks Notvende for that. That really brought a smile to my face and made me chuckle. And I hope you are doing well over there in Austria. Now, for those of you that are Patreon members, stay tuned for the second half of tonight's show. We're going to talk about slow glow hunting lights, and then we're going to talk about some impact weapons and my thoughts on those. And if you're not a Patreon supporter, I'd like to urge you to consider becoming one and support this broadcast. You can go to patreon.com/meattrapper and get signed up and become part of our tribe and get access to a lot of bonus material and videos.
Missionary man.